Welcome to another Writers After Dark. We're here because good stories start with the writers, since wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. I'm your host, Summer Brooks, and today with me is acclaimed urban fantasy author Laurel K. Hamilton. And while you may be familiar with her Nita Blake series, her newest book is about a new detective she's introducing to the world. A Terrible Fall of Angels features Detective Zaniel Havelock, and we're here to talk about his story. Hi, Laurel.
Hi, Summer. It's wonderful to be here.
Awesome, awesome. Now, detectives, especially detectives that cross over into the science fiction and fantasy and horror genres, are a weak spot of mine. And anytime I hear of a new detective who's in an unusual situation or has unusual talents, my ears perk up and go, oh, really? Tell me more. So tell us about your new hero.
Detective Zaniel Havelock is a member of the Metaphysical Coordination Unit, also known as the Heaven and Hell Squad. And if there is a crime that seems to have an angelic or demonic side to it, or actually they cover all the supernatural crime, they're the special division for that, but Zaniel is their angel expert. And so at the beginning of the book, the first line, there were angel feathers in the dead woman's bed. The first line was the first line that came to me, and that usually means that whatever's been Kem's first doesn't end up in the book. This time it did. So Zaniel specializes because he can hear the angels. He can actually communicate with them. He was trained as an angel speaker at the College of Angels, where he was brought in at age 7, recruited, and it's like a cloistered order. So from the ages of 7 to 20, he was cloistered away, learning to speak with the higher order of angels. And then a tragedy happened, and he felt he could no longer serve there. So he left and went out into the modern world, having never seen a computer, never seen a car. And suddenly, he ended up going to the army because he was 6'3" and athletic, and he knew nothing. So walked by a recruiter's office and said, young man, may I talk to you? And he did a tour in the army, and then he joined the police force. And he is the only angel speaker to have been fully trained and then to have left. Sometimes they fail their training. Sometimes they're driven mad, and they are cast out if they fail. But he actually is an angel speaker in good standing, but he chose to leave because he just didn't think it was right to stay.
I'm curious about the background of a world that not only acknowledges that angels and demons exist and are involved with shenanigans against humankind, and it happens so often that there is actually a recognized police division dedicated to investigating those shenanigans. How did that become canon in this world?
Well, there's usually a sentence, a jumping off point for each world that I create. And the sentence jumping off point for this one is that heaven and hell have a treaty. They've come together and made a treaty years ago, agreeing not to do Armageddon and destroy the world. But there are rules in the treaty. And everybody knows in the human world that the treaty exists. What they are not privy to is exactly what those rules are. But it is very important that only so many demons come out of hell. So they're only allowed to do so many things. So it is very important to have a unit that can help police that, literally. Because if the treaty is broken, then final battle happens and the world as we know it ends. So if the whole world knows that, literally, you know, I don't go into detail how, but it's the equivalent of the burning bush coming down and telling and saying, this is, we've agreed not to destroy you, but, you know, there are rules. And if you want to go in existence, you have to put some effort into keeping things working. So that was the premise. And then I thought, okay, modern world, this has been happening for a long time. I had to cut some scenes that showed how everyday it was. I had one scene where there was, you know, a burning tower, a pillar of burning fire on the 401 during rush hour, and it just comes over the radio for the rush, and it's going, and there's a tower of fire in the 401 during rush hour. We really avoid it if you can, guys. And whoever this message is for, could you just pray or something, get this message so that we can get back to work? I had to cut it. It was so fun, but I had to cut it. It didn't work. But it's that level of every day. And, you know, if it's been interesting researching angels, I've got probably a stack of books on biblical and angelic and stuff that's taller than my waist at this point. At 5'3", that's not as tall as some people, you know, but quite a bit. And I learned a great deal about angels that I didn't know. One of the biggest surprises to me was, depending on what source you're using, what old ancient source you're using or not so ancient source, what angels are in heaven and what angels fell are not agreed upon. And you have different names on different lists depending on what your sources are. So, you know, I use a lot of angel names because you lose your name when you join the College of Angels. So Zaniel was not born Zaniel. That was the name he was given at the college. And since if you fail at the College of Angels, they kick you out and they take back the angel name. And you are forced to use the name you were born with, or they don't care. They take back your angel name. But he left in good standing, so he was able to keep his angelic name. But as far as naming angels, I will have to decide eventually which list I'm going to go with, who's fallen and who's not, which was interesting because you think of the hierarchy of heaven and hell, you think of it as fairly set somewhere. Someone must have agreed on it. No, the religious leaders have not been able to agree on that in a very long time.
And part of me is curious to see the history of, you know, who's on the list, who's off the list, because how do you have that argument?
You know, I don't know, because, you know, in modern world, most people aren't going to sit there and debate you on what angel should be where. But at some point in the church's history, that was a thing, apparently. You would sit around and debate which angel went where. And some people literally said they channeled angels. The angels spoke to them, and that's how they knew. Others actually went through old religious texts and anything they could get that where people wrote anything down and used that. And it's been very interesting, you know, going through it. As with all research, I always start with something that either says dictionary or encyclopedia in the title, because I find that is got. And it has to have a good bibliography. But if it says encyclopedia or dictionary, it usually is a good overview. And the one I ended up starting with, and I think that because I started with it, it's become my favorite, A Dictionary of Angels, Including the Fallen Angels by Gustav Davidson. And a lot of the angel books, because nobody can agree who's fallen and who's not, the angel books you can find, they all include the fallen, because nobody can decide who is and who isn't.
Interesting.
So very much so.
What if those fallen angels are really not quite so black and white? What if their nature is fluid?
Well, I mean, by their very nature, I mean, when you say fluid, angels are not set the way we are. They're spirit. So that is fluid by its very nature. It's not set. But one thing is very clear from anything that I've read, and that is fallen angels are still angels. They don't get the old idea that they get stripped of their powers is not true. They never stop being angels, even fallen. The fallen are still fallen angels. They are not, they don't cease to be angels. And there is debate on what is a demon. A lot of people think that devils and demons are fallen angels. No, No, there were devils and demons long before there were fallen angels. So most people think that most people who have spent time philosophizing that think that demons are their own things. They are beings unto themselves. But then you get other writers, and this goes back centuries, this debate on are devils and demons their own thing, or are they fallen angels? The fallen angels are usually put in the hierarchy of hell. So, you know, I'll be exploring that in later books that, you know, did hell have a hierarchy of its own? And then suddenly all these fallen angels come in and muscle everybody out? Or did the hierarchy get set once we had fallen angels? And it's fascinating to read it and realize that there was serious debate. This was something people sat around and seriously debated for centuries, and nobody could agree.
I guess my question was more of, what if someone defined an angel as fallen, but later on something was attributed to that angel that returned it to a state of grace? What if they're going back and forth on, you know, both sides of the tracks, so to speak? That just opened up a whole nother door of whoa to me.
Well, you know, you could take that as a jumping off point for yourself and say that may be why some angels are on different lists. I'm going to have to at some point, you know, either stick with angels that everybody agrees are fallen and everybody agrees isn't, or I'm going to have to make choices eventually in the series. And I have already explored the idea that there are different, that there are more than one way to fall from grace. It isn't just because of, you know, the war in heaven being kicked out. Angels can still fall from grace. And we discussed that in the book, that, that human interaction with the angelic can impact, spirit and flesh impact each other for both good and ill. And that, angels can still fall even today.
Cool. I'm so curious about this world, especially the way you described the College of Angels. Now, I'm hoping maybe in subsequent books we're going to get deeper and deeper and deeper into the history of the College of Angels, how it came about, why they choose angel names for their acolytes. And I mean, does that mean that a particular name that they give someone who's studying there, they are connected to a particular angel because of that name? Or
no.
is it more broad than that?
No, it has nothing to do with the angel that they work with most, because the angel they work with most has the name. So it'd be just confusing. If you're working with an angel and you have the same angel name, it'd just be confusing.
Yeah.
So and there's some names that don't get used. They are so intrinsically tied to a particular angel. Like, nobody's going to name anybody. No acolyte will be named Michael. In the book, we talk about the fact that the Archangel Michael was chosen to do a world broadcast on the idea that he would be strong enough that the live, simultaneous, worldwide broadcast would not impact him as much as it would other angels. And even the Archangel Michael, there are, you know, millions to billions of people, because this has never been done before, and it was done in recent memory in just the last few years here in this world. And the fact that he was on television live, you know, the so many millions to however large an audience, they had their idea of what Michael should look like. And at the end, more people in the world wanted him to be dark-complected, dark-skinned, than wanted him to be blonde and blue-eyed and the, you know, Renaissance angel. And there were riots in the street. We talk about in the book, there were riots in the street because Michael did not look like what everybody wanted him to look like. And we also talk on the book about how when he went back, that the College of Angels actually had to help him. Some of the people at the College of Angels had to help the Archangel Michael undo this solid form, because so many people believing at once made him too solid to become spirit again. And they had to work magic using other people of flesh, to help him of spirit to get back to his original form.
Wow. There's a lot going on in this world. And you mentioned magic. How much is there of the magic and the angelic magic?
Well, when I say magic, I mean supernatural. I just mean supernatural, psychic, anything that would seem wondrous or magical to us in this reality.
Okay.
So for me, magic is my magic system means all the supernatural stuff in a book. I just call it my magic system. Part of it is that, you know, probably the first novel I ever wrote was Elves, Dwarves, and Dragons, much more traditional. So it's my magic system. And so for me, the angelic is a different kind of magic, but it is still magic. It is still wondrous and otherworldly. So I don't really differentiate. It's all amazing. So it goes under the same umbrella. Individual practitioners of individual magics have different ideas about it themselves individually in the book. But as far as I'm concerned, it goes under the same umbrella.
Nice. So what sparked the impetus to create a new hero in a different kind of world?
Well, you know, weirdly, I am less sure about this one than any of the other two series that I created. I know exactly why Anita Blake exists. I know exactly why Mary Gentry exists. About 10 years ago, I had an idea out of nowhere. I was not reading, I swear, I was not reading Angels. I was not thinking about them. I hadn't seen a movie, whatever. Just one day, this line came into my head. There were angel feathers in the dead woman's bed. And I put it on a sticky note and put it on my sticky note wall in my office. And I would walk past it, look at it, and go, I thought it was a short story. And then about 2014, I sat down to start to write the first chapter. I thought it was a story. I didn't know it was the first chapter. And when I was almost done with the first chapter, I went, crap, it's a book. And I was still actively writing the Mary Gentry series and the Anita Blake series. I thought, I can do two series at once. I can't do three. So I put it back in a folder and would write A Shiver of Light, the ninth Mary Gentry book that year. And then in 2020, I finally thought it was soup. It was ready to go. And we all know what happened in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never had a book so disrupted in my entire life. I have never been disrupted in the writing of a book to this degree. And part of it was that I just put Sucker Punch, the Anita Blake novel, to my editor. I just sent it when lockdown started, and they suddenly were kicked out of their offices. And so my editor and the managing editor, we thank God tech let us do it, but they had to change how they do all of it because they were home. And we had to figure out a new way to do things with just three of us. And so on my end, I'm in my office, so nothing really changed. But on their end, it must have been incredibly hard for them. And so I stopped writing to do the edits that took longer because of the disruption. And then I went back to it. And then so many of my fans told me that they wanted more stories, that it was helping them just keep sane during all this, that I talked to my editor. I said, could we do an extra novel this year? And she says, can you do an extra novel this year? I said, yeah, I think I can. And she says, if you can do it, we can do it. And so that's how we got Raphael, which was supposed to be much shorter than it was. It was actually long enough to be a main hardback book, but it was supposed to be one of the small paperback novels. So it came out in paperback, but it's actually long enough to bend the other way. Then I went back to writing Terrible Fall of Angels, and then the edits came back and so many things began. But here's the thing. I was really irritated at being disrupted so much, even though it was my own fault for wanting to write more other stories. But I think I needed to, go through the whole of 2020 and into 2021. I needed that whole process of seeing what was happening in the world to impact the writing of the book, impact Zaniel and his world. Because I know for a fact, if I'd written this book 10 years ago, or even in 2014, that it would have been a much darker book. It would have been, it really would have. I mean, bad things happen. We have a serial killer and some horrendous crimes, but it is still a much more hopeful book. And it is full, I mean, we all need angels in our lives right now. We really need to be reminded that it's not just bad stuff out there, that there's good stuff out there and good people out there. It's been hard to keep that thought going. And A Terrible Fall of Angels really, I think, benefited from the fact that by the time I got back to it and could finally sit down to really concentrate on it, I, along with the rest of the world, needed more good angels in my life.
Wow. I never thought of a pandemic, global, near global lockdown as being an inspiration to add hope to a book.
Well, it's how it impacted me as a writer. Other people have taken, you know, but I don't know about you. I cannot read another dystopia. I am done. I need some hope. And I believe there is hope to be had, but one of the interesting things is the lockdown. I've done more meditation, more journaling than I've ever done. Like a lot of people, I've been, you know, trying to do self-care, self-monitoring practices. And so I'm more aware of why I do things as a writer than I ever have been before. And I did not realize until I had the first draft, the second draft done, actually, of how much this had impacted me and in what way. And then I went, oh, because I know what my original plan was, and it was much darker. So, I've taken hope from it because we have to. We have to take hope from it, and we have to share hope with each other. The hard thing about this is it's separated us. We can't come together like we do in most disasters. And I mean, I'm an introvert, but not as much of an introvert as I thought I was, because I didn't realize how much interaction I had just going to the store, doing errands, and how much I miss just interacting with strangers every day. And we need each other. And if we keep getting locked down or trapped away from each other, then I'm reaching out to everybody in the only way I know how and going, here's a story. Let me tell you a story. Gather around the fire. Let me tell you a story. And let me tell you a story with hope in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, things are bad, but it doesn't have to stay this way. And it isn't always this way. And I think that is really one of the strengths of storytelling. It can let us travel to other worlds. It can let us escape without being able to leave the place where we are. And it can share messages, and it can share positive messages as well as negative. I think that's one of the reasons that we tell stories to each other.
Yeah, I just think it says a lot about the deeper elements of the human spirit, because you read all these stories about people going above and beyond to make sure that their neighbors were safe, their neighbors were fed, their neighbors were still at least in some sort of contact with other human voices in order to hang on, and to hear that situation made you re-examine. It's like, what else can I do? What can I do differently with this story to echo that? And I think that's kind of cool.
And it, like I said, I normally, it would take me a few months to a few years after I write something to be that aware of the process. But so much introspection has gone into the last 15, 16 months. I think for all of us, but I know for me, that I've never been more aware of why I do what I do. And it's a little uncomfortable, to be honest, to be that aware of the subconscious part of my process while I'm doing it. But I've kind of made peace with that, and it's not weirding me out anymore. I just go, okay, there's that issue. There's that issue for both for good and ill. So that's why I do that. Okay, that's cool. I some writers, there's a quote by Wordsworth, some writers take a word out of their overcoat pocket, others take it out of their guts. I misquoted it. I apologize for butchering Wordsworth. But the philosophy of that is very true. Some writers are very light. Even if they're writing horrible things and characters are dying everywhere, they don't seem to bleed with their characters or cry with their characters. I am unfortunately one of the others. I am shaken to my core when bad things happen with my characters. I'm very emotional. I joke that I'm a method writer, like a method actor. It's almost that bad sometimes. And so for me, things affect me profoundly. They come out in my writing in some way. Sometimes it's not always clear that that's what it is, but it is. I mean, this time of introspection, I actually now know the emotional impetus for every series I've done. Now I am aware of what the fuel of my creative fire was for each of them. And I did not know all that before this started.
So do you have some idea yet of where Zaniel's path will lead him?
I'm
still figuring that out.
Thanks to the fact that part of my process with the first book in a series, I now know that part of my process, no matter how many books I write, is I either do a series of short stories that touches on a world, and that's my world building, the exploration and getting the voice down, or the first book in the series is going to be a mess. And that, because it's my world building and it's me exploring the voice and exploring the world. And that means that unlike my usual first drafts, which are pretty darn clean, 70% garbage, 30% gold. And then you just have to rewrite it. And A Terrible Fall of Angels was that. And because of that, though, in the very rough first draft, I now know one of the climaxes of the series, if not the climax of the series. It's almost like my subconscious was writing me an overarching plot line of the thing with the College of Angels and the overarching treaty and everything. So that is one overarching thing. And then each individual book is going to have a mystery to solve so that each one will be a satisfying story on their own. I hate cliffhangers. I hate a series where each book is so dependent on the other that you can't read them separately. That just drives me nuts. So I don't do that to readers. I do not know what's going to be happening in Zaniel and in Zaniel's personal life, Detective Zaniel Havelock's personal life. I do not know because he surprised me on that one. It wasn't what I had planned. And, it's pretty early in the book. I don't think we're giving away too much. And that is that he's actually married. When the book opens, he's 6 months separated from his wife because she just isn't comfortable being married to a police officer. It's hard to be married to someone in who's police, because the hours, the danger, the stress. And, he's brokenhearted when the series opens. He's brokenhearted about his not being home with his wife and their little boy. But he's also, as we get hints and learn more, he's brokenhearted about what drove him away from the College of Angels and made him feel he had to leave. He's brokenhearted about friends that he couldn't save. And, that's the big thing. It took me a while to realize that really at heart, Zaniel is the White Knight in the best sense of the word. He really does want to save everybody and protect everybody. And the hardest thing for people like that is to learn is you can't save everybody, no matter how hard you try. And that he is really an old-fashioned romantic in the best sense of the word. Somebody who believes in duty and honor and so many old-fashioned things that have kind of fallen out of favor. And, I think we need a little more of people trying to be the best person they can be. And Zaniel tries. He really does.
Awesome. Well, let my listeners know where they can find you online and keep up to date on the next books you're working on.
Well, on TikTok, I am LKH underscore official. On Twitter, I am LK Hamilton. On Instagram, I am official LK Hamilton, and I am laurelkhamilton.com. I have no idea. And I have to say that 16 months ago, I'd have been up and out and going, and I'm just going, it's outside.
Well, Laurel, thank you for your time today and sharing your enthusiasm and hope for your new series, starting with A Terrible Fall of Angels.
You're very welcome. It's been lovely being here. And I hope that... I hope by this time next year that we're all in very better places.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching. Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Once again, the book is A Terrible Fall of Angels. And it should be out now. Came out August 17th in various formats. And it delves into blending mystery, action, angel mythology, and I guess the larger picture would be good and evil and how many steps there are in between. And how about you? What are your thoughts on angels, demons, devils, and humanity? Let me know. Send me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com, or you can reach out on Twitter at writeafterdark, that's W-R-I-T-E, after dark. Or come on by the website, writersafterdark.com, and leave a comment. Get that conversation going. You can listen to Writers After Dark on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Player FM. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, or are a member of Podchaser, please consider leaving us a review or a rating. Help our profile. Help raise that profile, help signal boost the show and the interviews you are finding so entertaining. Maybe a few others may as well. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting Writers After Dark and all of the shows in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, which includes Slice of Sci-Fi, Babylon Podcast, Charlie Jade, and a few others, and a few other websites without podcasts. All of those stay online with the help of your pledges and donations. So I thank you all. If you would like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. And pick a tier. Anyone who is a patron can find themselves the recipient of a perk. Every month I pick an email address out of the hat, and that person can select from a Blu-ray, a DVD, a 4K disc, or a book. And that is my way of saying thank you for your support. And I get lots and lots of review materials, physical copies of stuff, and I can't keep it all because I don't have the space for it. So my gift to you for helping me keep this engine of podcasting madness going. If you would rather just make a donation every now and then, the PayPal link is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And coming up very soon, there will be a Ko-fi page where you can also submit either a donation every now and then or sign up a subscription. I'm trying to figure out how to make the Ko-fi subscriptions work the same as the Patreon subscriptions. Everybody's in a big bucket. Somebody's a winner. But I'm hoping to get that Ko-fi page up and running sometime in the next couple of weeks, so keep an eye out for that. It will be at ko-fi.com/sliceofsci-fi. That's ko-fi.com. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. And remember, keep looking for your own stories.